Hey, Andrew here, and really excited that we are hiring for a director of community and connection in our 7- and 8-figure owners community to help shape strategy and connect members online and in person. Specifically, looking for someone with amazing interpersonal skills and a track record of connecting, serving, and bringing people together, perhaps in the community or the hospitality spaces. Some great perks: you get to learn from deeply experienced owners. It's a 100% remote position, and you get an annual month-long sabbatical every year to rest, recharge, and grow. So if that sounds interesting, or you know someone who might be a good fit, all the details are at ecommercefuel.com/DOC for Director of Connection. And the deadline to apply is October 22nd. Thanks so much. The E-Commerce Fuel podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what one-click upsell makes super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes. Get your first upsell up and running. Check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, a show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And Matt, it's been a little while since we've had Bill on the podcast. It's been a full 7 days. So I thought, hey, man, we should really get this guy back on and just have him on. But in all seriousness, it's good to have Bill back on again. Mr. Bill D'Alessandro, he is the owner of Natural Dog Company. He is one of the voices behind Acquisitions Anonymous and a long time and truly loved co-host of the show here. Bill, welcome back on for your second time in a week, man.
Well, thank you for allowing me to have you on, because I basically emailed you and said, we should talk about this.
You totally did. Yeah, which is why it's definitely. You were dead 100% spot on, because this is about as timely of an issue as they come for people in the e-commerce ecosystem. So today we're talking about Amazon, the case with the FTC has brought against Amazon, and all sorts of nuance there. Is it a monopoly? Is it good for consumers? Is it bad? We're going to kind of get into it. And you and I have had different perspectives on Amazon. You've definitely been probably, we all link up to an episode we did, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago about just Amazon in general and the future of e-commerce. So we've had different takes on this, so this should be fun. But why don't you just kick us off with kind of teeing up the landscape, the case, and kind of what's happening right now for people? I'm guessing many do know, but maybe a little more of a nuanced view of what's happening.
Yeah. So just kind of summary of the news here. So last week, the Federal Trade Commission sued Amazon, the FTC and 17 states joined in the lawsuit, suing Amazon for anti-competitive practices. So the lawsuit is brought by Lina Khan, who is the chair of the FTC, has been widely outspoken as kind of a anti-big tech, maybe activist isn't quite a fair word, but it's darn close. So she and the FTC are suing Amazon for a number of anti-competitive practices. The FTC alleges that Amazon is engaging in anti-discounting measures to keep prices high for consumers. They are conditioning sellers' ability to win the buy box on using FBA, and they're saying that's anti-competitive and bad for consumers. And also that Amazon is extracting monopoly rents by biasing Amazon search results, replacing organic search results with paid advertisements, and charging sellers a lot of money. The FTC basically is seeking an injunction to either prohibit Amazon from requiring FBA use for the buy box, among other things, or even, I think, on the extreme end, to break up Amazon into a couple different pieces. Although, as we'll get into, I think that is unlikely. So this is kind of the first, you know, big landmark lawsuit against Amazon. Like, it is going to be heard, you know, in the highest courts. Like, this is the big deal. And there's been a lot of ink spilled on it in the news over the last week or two. And we thought it would be interesting to talk about from an e-com seller's point of view here on the ECF podcast.
Yeah, great summary. And there's a fantastic discussion in the forums we'll link up to in the e-commerce field private forums that had a lot of interesting takes on this. Bill, so I think there's, I mean, we were talking earlier about how you think about this. I think there's kind of three questions is Amazon a monopoly? And so that's kind of like ties into, is the case that FTC is bringing against, how much teeth, how much merit does it have? And a big part of that is actually good for consumers or not. So there's the monopoly question, but then there's also the question of like, should Amazon be broken up or regulated? Even if it doesn't meet the strict criteria of monopoly, or the case doesn't have as much grounding as it should, or grounds as it should, is it, you know, should you think about regulating Amazon and be broken up? So definitions, like when you think about monopoly, we should probably define that term first before we get too deep.
Yeah. So if you were to Google what is a monopoly, and if you were to look at kind of the classical definition of a monopoly, a monopoly is characterized by a lack of competition within a market and unavailable substitutes for a product. It usually means competition is virtually non-existent. It usually means the monopolist can charge higher than market prices and extract supernormal profits because there are essentially no competitors, right? So this whole concept of breaking up monopolies that we have here in the United States is predicated on consumer welfare. All of these laws came out of Standard Oil, you know, and all these classic huge American monopolies during kind of the Industrial Revolution here in the States, or I guess not the Industrial Revolution, but, you know, kind of the late 1800s, early 1900s, where, you know, Standard Oil was charging absurd prices for kerosene because there was actually nowhere else you could get kerosene. And then they would drive anybody who tried to start a kerosene company, they would drive them out of business, right? By artificially lowering prices, absorbing losses until the smaller competitor couldn't absorb them anymore. And then it would go back to charging super normal prices for kerosene to consumers. And so that's why we have laws in this country, because they exist to protect consumers from unfairly high prices. So that is what kind of the law and the dictionary would tell you a monopoly is. Does that fit with your definition of monopoly, Andrew?
I think so. I think it fits with the standard definition. Because yeah, you always think of like Teddy Roosevelt and like Standard Oil and Rockefeller in the traditional setting up for it. But I wonder, like you think about it today, circa 2023, if you look at Amazon, because I think you would say, a lot of people would say, oh, there's lots of other options out there. You can buy from other people. If you look at Amazon, I think they're roughly 40% of online shopping, right? Which you say, oh, that's not that much. That's less than half. But can you think of, and where I'm getting here is thinking that I think the definition maybe needs to be updated a little bit based on, you know, compared to what it was 100 years ago, given the market, the economy, and technology. Can you think of anything else, apart from maybe the government or government-controlled entities, that has a 40% market share of industry? Because I feel like it doesn't seem high until you try to come up with any other comparison. And I can think of few, if any, that meet that criteria.
I think you might find more than you would expect. I don't have these numbers too much at the tips of my fingers. You know, I think in food, you might look at the Crafts, the Mondelez. You know, like there are some very, very large consumer packaged goods conglomerates. You think of kind of the Tyson chickens, like the big meat processors, you know, where you have kind of these, not necessarily monopolies, but oligopolies. You know, you got kind of three or four huge competitors, and they just kind of gobble up anybody else that comes along. I mean, you can have a whole separate conversation about Amazon peers, the Googles, the Metas, right? Mm-hmm. Are those monopolies or not? I think it does exist. 40% though is a lot. I mean, they're like, as anybody who is an online consumer, and certainly, you know, if you're an online seller, Amazon is the huge silverback gorilla in the e-commerce room. You can't ignore it.
Yeah. And I think even if you look at Tyson or even like phone companies, right? Like, you know, Verizon, all of those, you know, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, all those people, I guess those two combined here, maybe a bad case I'm bringing up here to try to bolster my position. But yeah, 40% just seems like at or near the top. So anyway, I do think like, only reason I'm saying this is I do think maybe our definition should shift a little bit for today of being like, you look at, I'm just guessing here, but you know, Standard Oil, guessing it was 70, 80, 90%, just a guess from how ruthless he was competitively. But I also think it does, I don't think you need to hit that standard to have a monopoly that can be considered 1A and B, cause real harm in the marketplace to consumers and also from a competitive standpoint. But I think we're, yeah, roughly in the same ballpark, maybe with a little bit of gradient.
I think the reason Amazon feels so much bigger, it feels like the 40% feels like so much, is because in e-commerce, the other 60 is totally fragmented, right? There's Amazon and then there's everyone else. You know, like you think about packaged goods or chicken or some of these other examples that I mentioned, there's usually always a pretty powerful number two. You know, maybe the leader has 40 and then the second, there's two that each have 30% of the market, right? But Amazon in the e-commerce industry sort of stands alone. It's Amazon versus the world. And that's, I think, why they feel like such a juggernaut, because no one is even close to challenging them.
Yeah. So your thoughts on the case. I think you think your position is groundless case. They're not going to win. But winning aside, like, do you think FTC has a legitimate case here? And maybe even, you know, maybe go as far as, do you think Amazon is a monopoly? They're kind of tied in there. So what are your thoughts on that?
So this puts me in a very strange position as an e-commerce seller myself, as someone who has sold on Amazon for a long time and felt as though Amazon, you know, absolutely pushes sellers around. I mean, I don't think there is any disagreement between you or me or of anybody on this podcast that Amazon is seller hostile. Amazon is trying to pull as many chips as possible onto its side of the table, margin-wise, out of sellers' pockets as they possibly can. They are incompetent when they are not hostile, as anyone who's ever dealt with seller support knows. So I am not here to be an Amazon apologist. What I would like to talk about here is that even those things can be true, and yet I do not believe the government is making a serious case here to break Amazon up. And the reason for that is the antitrust laws do not exist to protect sellers. They exist to protect consumers. And I think it's going to be a pretty difficult uphill battle to argue that Amazon makes prices higher for consumers when everything Amazon has ever done, and if you dissect it, and I'd like to on this podcast, everything Jeff Bezos has ever said or architected the company to be is designed to push down prices. Basically what Amazon wants, and I don't know if you've ever seen Andrew, you've seen like the Jeff Bezos flywheel, like that he wrote on a napkin when he started Amazon. You ever seen that?
I don't think I have. No.
Well, let's link it up in the show notes. But basically, Bezos, his entire business model is based on what's called the Amazon flywheel. And it basically is that if you can increase selection and decrease prices, it leads to a great customer experience. So you get more customers. And then when you have more customers, you get more sellers, which leads to more selection and competition between sellers, which drives down consumer prices, which brings you a better customer experience, which brings you more consumers, which brings you more traffic, which brings you more sellers. And it's a cycle, right? So that is sort of, if you Google Amazon flywheel, it will be on the first page. This has been covered extensively. But key to that is that Amazon wants lower prices for the consumer. It's not that they necessarily want good margins for sellers and lower prices for the consumer. You know, if you're going to have lower price for the consumer, where does the reduction in price come from? It's got to come out of someone's margin. And I don't think Amazon wants it to be theirs.
Yeah, no, good points. And I think, so jumping in on a couple of them. So first you said like antitrust laws are for consumers, not sellers. 100%, yes, they are. But I think a couple things. One, but antitrust laws also exist to help with anti-competitive behavior, right? And if you look at Amazon, like you talked about how Standard Oil just kind of went up and created this place where they created an environment where no one else could compete with them. And what they did, my history is not great on them, but I think there's times where they sold stuff at a loss, or they made it impossible for other people to compete until they became big and then they could exercise their monopoly power. And I think if you look at Amazon, and I give Amazon props for this, but that is pretty much what they did. They pretty much ran their business at a loss for 20 years, either using cheap capital from shareholders or more recently using the profits from like AWS to be able to create a marketplace where that's how they were able to thrive. They were able to do it on no margin. So, and then the second thing is like the flywheel, yes. I think if Amazon was able to keep that flywheel going with complete good intentions and doing it as well as it did in the early days, I think this would be a much easier argument to say, yes, Amazon does not have, you know, they're being misfairly treated here in terms of the lawsuit. But I think the story of human history is that people work really hard, they build something great, they become the leader in an area, and they realize, oh, hey, I'm at the top. I don't have to be as good. I don't have to work as hard. Ooh, I can slip a little bit here. I've got some information, some edge I can take. I can start using and abusing my position at the top for my benefit. So you said like, yes, 100%. They want lower prices for consumers. But I think there's a couple of things. One, like if you look at, this is actually, I think, one of the number one reasons you can say they're keeping prices not as low. So Amazon, as you know, they had, at least in the past, they had a very strict rule. You couldn't price anything lower on other sites, right? Like, so Bill, you sell, you know, let's say you sell an amazing, you know, paw rub for dogs, organic paw rub for dogs. If you are selling it on Natural Dog Company at a lower price than Amazon, at least in the past, that was against their terms of service. And I think it may not be technically against their terms of service now, but I think there's some pretty strong evidence that points to the fact that if you do that, they are going to either lower, you're going to lose the buy box on Amazon. And so you look at Amazon, Amazon is probably extracting close to 50% of every dollar of revenue that they generate. And so if you can offer it on your own website cheaper because you're not paying for Amazon fulfillment or their fees or all of the different tolls that they charge, you can't do that. You have to keep it at the higher price because, you know, otherwise on Amazon, you're going to potentially lose money or it's not as competitive. So I think that is a compelling reason for why Amazon is actually, in some instances, causing prices to be higher across the board.
So I hear that, right? So that is one of the big arguments, which is that they require price matching. Like they require best price on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you think they invented this concept? Like Walmart does this, like any other store, right? Retailer will get bent out of shape if your product is priced lower on another retailer. The law does not require that any retailer or platform do business with you. If they do not want to do business with you, the law cannot compel them to. And they can say, look, this is not a great experience for our consumers in our store that they have to pay more for your product than if they go down to the other place. It makes our store not competitive. And as a result, we would rather carry something else. Walmart's done this for years, right? Most retailers do this. I mean, this is like a classic retail tactic. Everybody wants to be at the same price. This is why the concept of minimum advertising price came to be, because you end up with all the retailers insisting on the lowest consumer price, right? And so you have these retailers race to the bottom and it eliminates everybody's margin, right? But what does it do? It drives down consumer prices. And that is why, in fact, the term minimum advertised price is so specific. It is, in fact, illegal for the brands to require the stores to maintain high prices, right? And that's why it's minimum advertised price, not minimum selling price. You even have manufacturers, MSRP, manufacturers suggested retail price. It is illegal to control the price on the brand side, to price fixing, in fact, right? So while I understand like that this feels crappy, I believe that Amazon has created this not because they want the price on the other marketplace to go up to match the price on Amazon, but because they want the price on Amazon to drop to be competitive with the other outlets.
Agreed. But I think that even their intentions aside, like there's definitely instances where, you know, where it actually is causing the price to actually not be as low as it could be off Amazon. And you're right, other retailers do this. Like this is definitely something like, of course, retailers want to have the lowest price. They don't want to be a disadvantage here. But I think the big distinction between other retailers and Amazon is Amazon controls 40% of the market and they are the huge, and so they have the power to flex this muscle, which is why I think the whole idea of monopoly and antitrust actually comes into play, right? Because they have the ability to pull this lever and keep prices where they want them. And intention aside, like they have that power to help control the pricing. And so I think you're right. I think a lot of times they do push it down and the intention probably is to push it down on their own website. But I think an unintended byproduct is there's people on off Amazon who would love to list at lower prices, but they can't because they've got this mafia style guy who says, hey, if you do that, if you lower your prices on other sites, on your site rather, we're going to go ahead and shut off 40% of your revenue. So I think that kind of comes full circle to the whole reason why owning 40% and them doing this is such a big deal. I think one other thing too is if you look at like from an anti-competitive perspective, like I think, and again, monopoly doesn't just deal with market share, doesn't just deal with are you the only purveyor of this good or this channel in the marketplace, but it deals with competitiveness. And you look at Amazon and they're effectively using data. Everyone knows this, right? Like they've used data to launch their own products. They're spying on everyone, or at least in the past have, spying on all of their sales, you know, sometimes in some cases their margins, if they can get their POs, reverse engineering their business models, which seems incredibly anti-competitive to me. And so if you asked anybody, hey, would you like to go and sell, are you willing to give up your pricing, your best sellers, and all of that information to a competitor? Everyone would say, absolutely not. But people do that oftentimes inadvertently to Amazon because it is so huge, because it's 40%, which I think is just, that's about as anti-competitive as they come.
So I call this the private label argument, right? And sellers are really bent out of shape that Amazon basically lets sellers come to Amazon, put their products on there. Amazon watches the data and sees what works and then knocks off the product and ranks their product right there with your product, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you're alleging, right? And that is 100% true. And I would also challenge you to walk down to your neighborhood grocery store and you will find 100 or more examples of literally the same thing where your grocery store is going to watch which brand of ketchup sells the best through their registers, where they have all the data on sales. They're sitting on a pile of sales data. They know, you know, the consumers in the aisles. They know which products they hesitate in front of. They know which products people pick up and put back. They know which ones people sell. And they use that data, including probably they know the supplier of, you know, wherever you make your ketchup or you make your whatever food, right? And they go make the exact same thing. They label it almost identical. They price it 30% lower. And then not only that, they put it right next to yours on the shelf, like right next to it. So you can't possibly miss it. And in fact, sometimes they'll put the expensive brand name one on a lower shelf and they'll put the private label one on the top shelf. How is this any different? This is called retail.
You're right. You're right. Exact same, great point. Exact same strategy. But again, I think the difference is the size and the scope. I mean, if you think about grocery, like Kroger's a huge one. Let's just ballpark say that they are 25%, 30% of all grocery, which is probably, I think that's probably a safe bet. You've got Whole Foods, you know, you've got Safeway, you've got Albertsons, you've got, so yes, that happens. But the big difference here is just the scale at which you've got it. And like, even in the grocery market, you've maybe got, if that happens to you, let's say that's happening across the board, but you have one of the grocery chains that's really abusing you. You have one person only owns, you know, let's say 25% of the market is the top across all different grocery brands. You still have 75% of the market you can go to, and not just 75% where it's fragmented like in e-commerce, but you have two or three or four that you can go to and actually be able to potentially, there's competition among major players. In Amazon has zero competition. And so there's no checks and balances even to that in terms of the egregiousness. Like if you were in Walmart, for example, or let's use Kroger. If you are a Kroger and what's the super fancy ketchup that you have that has, you know, it's a really high-end ketchup, and they do like a high-end ketchup, high-end mustard. Do you know who I'm talking about?
There's Sir Kensington's, or there's like a or one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Sir Kensington's. So Sir Kensington, let's say Sir Kensington rolls it out to Kroger, and Kroger comes in, and not only do they make something a little like it, but they completely rip it off, almost exact same packaging, almost an identical product, and put it right next to it for dollars.
Which is
less,
what they
right?
do. That's called retail. That's private labeling. That's what happens. So this is not the rest, I mean, that happens.
But I mean, even like in terms of I'm not talking about a similar, you know, upmarket ketchup, like the exact same thing. It almost look and feels exactly the same. Like Amazon has ripped off people's products almost to the T and gotten away with it. And if that happened in a Kroger where it was just a blatant, not just an inspired by, but a ripped off by, that Sir Kensington almost certainly is going to say, screw this. I'm going to go over to Safeway. I'm going to go over to Whole Foods. I'm going to talk to these people. And you can
Safeway and Whole Foods will do the identical practice within 6 months. They all do the exact same as retail. I challenge you to go to any retailer. Do you know that Whole Foods, which by the way is owned by Amazon, ironically, 40%, close to 40% of their revenue is 365 store brand products, branded their 365.
But 365. That's what 365. It's not Sir Kensington's. Like, I think that's the point, is that Amazon has ripped off exact same product, similar packaging in some instances. I'm less certain about that, but the exact same product. Like, there's been, I remember Peak Designs. They're a company out of San Francisco. They do these really cool photography and messenger bags. They did a whole write up on how Amazon ripped off their product almost verbatim, like just shamelessly. And so you're right. Like, the inspiration is there, but I think the level of just straight up copying in some instances is only able to get away with it because they are such a huge player and because the rest of the market is so fragmented.
Well, what I would say is I saw the Peak Design. Yes, they completely ripped off Peak Design. That being said, it has nothing to do with whether or not they're a monopolist. We have intellectual property laws in this country. And if Peak mm-hmm. Design's bag is protectable under our IP laws, then they would sue Amazon for patent infringement or intellectual property infringement, and they would win. if Amazon is able to rip off your product, I'm not arguing whether it's right or wrong. I'm arguing whether it is illegal. And in this country, products get knocked off all the time. It is very hard to protect a product from an intellectual property level. I mean, all of my products, all of your product, anybody's products listening to this, unless you are holding a patent, anybody, not just Amazon, can effectively knock you off. And the only moat you have is brand. And that's just the way the world works. That's not monopoly or not. That's just intellectual property in the United States.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. That's a fair point. Well, I think this is probably a good segue then to, like, is this good for consumers, like, historically? And is Amazon, so we've kind of talked about the monopoly test. Is a monopoly technically and kind of gone through that. Is this good for consumers? And I would say my kind of point here would be historically, yes, Amazon has been a fantastic, like, I have used it. I know you remember. And I think they have done something to retail from a consumer perspective that is hard to argue with. Like, you get phenomenal fast shipping historically. Oftentimes the prices have been great or the lowest you can get historically. A lot of things in one spot. And so historically, over the last, you know, 20 plus years, I think generally it's been a great thing for consumers. But I think also, if you look at, there's what's good for consumers now and there's what's good for consumers going forward and the ecosystem you're creating for them. So, like, immediate versus the future. And I think, like, a couple of things. I think on, if you look at, and some of this ties back to the discussion we had earlier, Bill, about Amazon and what's happening there. But if you look at pricing, I think pricing is still relatively good on Amazon, but I think it's not necessarily always the rock bottom anymore. If you look at shipping, I think shipping is still, depends where you are and on the products. In major metros, you're going to get shipping that's not going to beat anyone else. If you're in, you know, medium to smaller size markets, you used to be able to get 2-day prime shipping. And that's totally been rolled back for a lot of people outside. Like, you just don't get 2-day shipping on a lot of things if you're not in a major metro anymore. Sometimes it's as long as a week. And I feel a little bit like that's a slight bait and switch on their prime promise. If you think about just the shopping experience, I have found it has been getting harder. I buy commodities on Amazon, like a jump rope. I went and bought a jump rope the other day, got on Amazon. It was $10, $15, got in my house the following day. Phenomenal experience as a consumer. It made total sense. But if I'm looking for—
And how much would you pay for the same jump rope if you had gone to a retail store? More?
Probably about the same, actually, but it was more convenient because I didn't have to leave the house.
Yeah. Unequivocally good for consumers, right? Lower prices, more convenience.
In that area. But I think anytime you start to get into anything more expensive, a little more intangible, if I'm looking for a composter that's $150 or $200 from a brand I'm not sure about, from a discovery perspective, there's so much, when I'm trying to find something that's not a cheap item, I don't have to worry about, you know, I'm not going to buy the protection plan on the jump rope. And it's not an Apple computer who has an established brand. In that middle, it's gotten so much more difficult because one, there's so much more junk ads at the top that I have to sift through. There's a, I feel like the quality of a lot of things in that middle has gone down. And I don't trust the reviews on Amazon because I feel like there's been so much review inflation and review fraud. So that's the area I think that's really difficult for sellers, especially like in our category, that, you know, we're not selling just trinkets. We're not an Apple, but we're in the middle. And from a discovery platform, I think for a consumer, it's getting harder and harder to discern what's good, what's not good, and trying to sift through things there.
So I don't disagree with any of those things. I mean, that is all obviously true to anyone who has shopped on Amazon, right? That being said, none of those are reasons to that are anti-competitive reasons, right? I mean, if it was illegal to like be a pain in the ass to deal with, like the cable companies would have been broken up. I mean, like try calling to, you know, get any help from anybody, you know, the cable, your electric company, like any of these, right? Like a bad consumer experience is not illegal. What is illegal is using a monopolistic position to drive up prices, right? So I agree with you, right? The reviews on Amazon are gamed. There is a ton of Chinese crap. You know, if you want to buy something high-end and branded, there's a counterfeit problem as well. I mean, there's all that stuff. It is all very real. None of that is monopolistic behavior that deserves to be broken up for. And I think that is what comes back to the crux of that. I think this lawsuit specifically is baseless. I do not think that Amazon doesn't have major flaws. But I think this lawsuit specifically, which is about, is Amazon bad for the consumer in the form of higher prices, which is how our antitrust laws define it? I think the answer would be no. You read these quotes, and I think the proof positive is anytime you need to hear something alleged against Walmart or against Amazon, you should say, does Walmart already do this? There is this quote going around, and I think you even repeated it earlier, Amazon takes one out of every $2 of products sold on the platform. Something sells for $2 between the commission and the FBA fee and everything. Amazon's keeping about a dollar. Seller keeps about a dollar. Have you ever done business with Walmart? If something at Walmart sells for $2, Walmart is absolutely buying it from the brand for less than a dollar. It is 100% factually true that Walmart takes probably more than a dollar on every $2 sold through Amazon. It's basically saying, this is a fancy emotional way of saying, Amazon has a 50% gross margin, which is the bogey for every retailer in the world. So like, this is not groundbreaking stuff. If you hear somebody saying Amazon should be broken up for doing a thing, an easy sanity test is to say, does Walmart do this thing as well? And if they do, it is not grounds. I mean, Walmart has been around for how long? They have never even attempted to have been broken up. Despite, and I'm not saying that Walmart has no negative externalities on society, and I think we should get into all that because I want to talk about that. But retailers, what's interesting about, I think, our antitrust laws in this country are that retailers are usually pretty immune. And the reason for that is the ways that retailers compete with each other are usually to drive down prices because they are usually selling fungible goods. The same thing you can buy at Amazon, you can buy at Walmart, you can buy at the hardware store down the street, usually, right? They're selling fungible goods. So the only way to differentiate is basically on price or consumer experience, right? So the ways that retailers tend to compete are by making things cheaper and better for consumers. And that's how they take market share from each other, right? And that is why you will not find a history of retailers in this country being broken up, at least under antitrust law, because the way our antitrust law is written, it talks about consumer protection. And retailers compete on better and cheaper consumer experiences. And I think that's why this lawsuit is baseless, because you've got Amazon. Amazon is Walmart. They're a retailer in this scenario. All the private label stuff, all the keeping, having a 50% gross margin, you know, all of that, it's not new. They're just very good at it. And that's the problem. Like, basically, they have not gotten here by kneecapping all of their competitors. They have gotten here by being so effing good that consumers want to be Prime members. They want the convenience. It's getting delivered same day sometimes. It's inexpensive, or at least it's a fair price. That's how they're elbowing everybody else, by being great. And that's not illegal.
No, I agree. I think the price, when you look at the case, like, I think on the grounds of price, even though we talked about earlier, some of the price and the low price things and how that could make prices higher in other areas. I think in general, the low pricing is the weakest area of the case. 100% agree with you there. I think the anti-competitive portion of that in that monopoly definition is the stronger portion of the case in I mean, you're right, like Walmart, that's a great way to think about it, a 50% gross margin. And but I think the anti-competitive area comes down to, a lot of other retailers do it, but the level of egregiousness with which Amazon does it, and also just again, going back to this, the fact that they're 40%, Walmart is, what percentage of Walmart is, do you know what they are in terms of just commerce in the United States or even online? I would guess it's sub 10% in both.
I would think so. They're about 20, they're between 25 and 30% market share in grocery is kind of the highest number I was able to find. Yep. And Kroger, by the way, to use your example, is about 10%. So Walmart is definitely the big dog. And then there's probably five or six that each have about 10% in grocery.
Got it. Okay. So I think it's just really the anti-competitive nature is the stronger portion of the case from the fact that they're able to rip things off more egregiously because they are just the only game in town of any size, right? Talking about going back to the fragmentation thing. And the fact that, I mean, you know, how many sellers do you have? Amazon is able to not really care about how they deal with their sellers because they know there's no other game in town. Like, this is why their customer service for their merchants is so bad, is because they're just like, hey, listen, like if you get cut off and you lose, you know, half of your revenue, you lose the potential to hit 40% of the internet sales, the only meaningful way, unless you want to build out your own channel, well, sorry, you're out of luck. We don't care. So I think they're able to leverage that size. And again, the biggest thing for me is the size. Pricing, yes. Pricing has been great for consumers. The anti-competitive nature and the size and the fragmented market for me is the strongest case on the FTC. But what do you think? What do you think about, like, is this good for consumers? Like, you think about all of the things I mentioned, like, you know, the shipping, lots of junk. You mentioned the cable companies. You're right. Like, it's not illegal to be a crappy company. And agree, like, it's not illegal to have a bad customer experience in some of these issues that Amazon is facing. But do you think this is good for consumers in the long run? Like, monopoly and laws and antitrust legislation and the letter of the law aside, do you think what's happening if Amazon stays this big for this long on this trajectory, do you think this is going to be, consumers are going to be benefiting from this in 5 to 10 years?
So I think it comes down to, I think Walmart and Amazon, I put in exactly the same bucket for what I'm about to say, which is that, are they good for consumers in, like, the American consumerism definition? Yes. Cheaper goods, better service, you know, having Walmart's open in towns and it puts all the other stores out of business for a reason, not because they put guns to the head of all the consumers, but because all the consumers voluntarily go to the Walmart because things are cheaper and more selection and all that stuff. So, did the consumers get better and cheaper goods? Yes. I think, though, large conglomerates like Walmart and Amazon are bad for society in the long run. And the reason for that is because, and again, like, if you want to see what Walmart or what Amazon is doing, look at Walmart. Walmart, for decades, has come into towns and put small hardware stores and small grocery stores out of business, right? And if you look, and I mean, the large fast food chains have done this, right? All these huge American companies, and they've done it by being really good. So don't mistake me, right? The consumers go to them by choice. But the effect that it has is that you are replacing owners, small business owners in our society with employees. Right? You know, but take the Walmart small town, right? You had how many small businesses are now gone, and you have more employees. Did Walmart create jobs? Maybe it did. But most of those are lower paying. They're all that money from Walmart is not staying in the local community, right? Like, those owners, when you have business owners in a community, they're usually paying attention to what's going on. They're donating to and voting in local elections. They're employing people. They tend to care more because there's lower distance between the owner and the store level employee, right? When you talk about a local general store or something like that. America was built on small business, right? And I think the reason that we are so successful as a country is a sense of shared ownership in the project being the Republic. And when you have these massive conglomerates, what they do is they create better consumer experiences, but they hollow out the value chain and they create fewer and fewer owners, right? And you can see what Walmart has done and Amazon. And this is why everyone feels like what Amazon is doing is wrong, but it's hard to prove under the law because Amazon is squeezing the crap out of sellers right? It's not squeezing the crap out of consumers. It's sellers that are getting it. And that's everybody listening to this podcast knows intimately what I'm talking about, right? They want more and more margin and they make it harder and harder to deal with them, but they have all the consumers because of great consumer experience. And so you're caught between a rock and a hard place. And it is hollowing out the margins of small businesses and systematically, right, driving small businesses out of business over time. And that is what I think is bad for society. It's the same reason I think Walmart is this catch-22, good for consumers, bad for society, right? It hollows out small towns. It hollows out value chains. It hollows out our economy. And I think Amazon's doing exactly the same thing. But what I don't know is how to stop it, because our existing legal framework does not contemplate this at all. And so I think any attempt to attack the Walmarts and the Amazons of the world under the existing framework, I think is futile. I think it will take Teddy Roosevelt type character to come in, galvanize the public, and actually pass new laws that say, hey, we care about small business ownership in this country, and we're not going to let this happen.
Yeah, Bill, that's a fantastic point. I was not thinking about it from the perspective of fewer business owners, but you're absolutely right. Like, I was in a big box store buying just a pair of swim trunks the other day. And the level of, I mean, it's indisputable, the level of detail you get from a shop owned by someone, or even owned by someone who has a small team that they interact with, versus at Walmart or Target or a massive big box store. Like, and increasingly, I feel like in the last 3 or 4 years, especially, has just gone downhill to the point where sometimes people just, even the team, the employees don't seem like they care. I think from a how to stop it perspective, it's so hard, because you said that this creates better consumer experiences. And I would say in the very short run, you are right. You get products cheaper and you get them more conveniently. But like, when is, you know, the lowest price good and the most convenient path like ever been a great way to a great life? Like, it's not. Like, that's anyone who has anything of substance, those are two things you probably want to run away from, right? But at the same time, like, we live, at least talking from an American perspective, like, we live, there's no way you can legislate this. I think part of it is a value decision from how we shop. We're going to turn into like a buy local little hippie market here podcast. But like, thinking about how you shop and how you make purchasing decisions, I suppose you could subsidize too. Like, if you wanted to go back in and reset, and actually that's maybe not a bad idea, subsidizing small local niche businesses again, where the other, because there's value, right? Like, if you're going to go shop, if you want to go buy, I'm a biker, if you want to go get a bike for your kid, Go to Bill's Bike Shop, which is the bike shop I grew up in, like in my small little town. Go buy a bike there versus Walmart. Like, the quality of the products there, the selection there, just the service you're going to get, those are all so much better at a small local shop. But you can't capture that value, right, on a balance sheet or a P&L, right? Like, you're never going to see that. So I don't know. I haven't thought about this, but I mean, apart from values, maybe you do subsidize some kind of ownership for entrepreneurship and for small business.
I mean, I do
at a retail level.
I believe that entrepreneurship and ownership is what this country is built on. And that, you know, I mean, think about, like, when you own a business and you employ people, you not only care, but you understand that the problems of small business are translatable to the problems of this country. Look at that. And this is my small political rant here. Look at the people who are in power. And there's one thing you'd be damn sure of: they've never owned a business in their entire lives. Right? They don't know what it is to balance a P&L. They don't know what it is to employ people and take care of them. They're not business owners. They don't understand how to manage complex systems, of which a business is one. And more people that understand those things are, I think, a requirement for our society to function well. And so we should, as a society, do whatever we can do to promote small business ownership. The problem, though, is, right, big businesses are more efficient. And that is what it ultimately comes down to. Like, that's why the returns to scale, like the literal phrase economies of scale, right? It's like an economic law, is that big businesses are more efficient. So Walmart is always going to be able to come in and sell the same fungible good, the same thing, the same skateboard, the same junk rope, whatever, for cheaper than Andrew's Hardware Store. Always. Forever. It's the law of gravity. But the extra $25, $50, you know, however many cents that you pay at Andrew's Hardware Store is intangibly going back into your community. And the problem, though, is it's very hard to ask a consumer to pay a dollar more for what feels like an intangible, right? It's kind of like a free rider problem. They're like, oh, I'll go pay a dollar less. Maybe everybody else shop at Andrew's Hardware Store and the society will keep functioning. And it kind of does, until it doesn't. And that's what I don't know. I don't have a good vision on how to fix that. But as you know, huge conglomerates continue to gobble up our economy, what you have is basically the producers of stuff, and then you have the middleman, essentially the retailer, Walmart, Amazon, or platform, choose your word, right? And then you have the consumer. And they're grabbing all the margin. And so it just leads to fewer businesses in the middle, which again is more efficient, but it leads to fewer owners. And I think that's a long-term problem.
Yeah. No, Bill, this is great. Good place to wrap it up from a time and also a topical perspective. Started on opposite sides, somehow managed to like kind of come near the end on our thoughts and opinions, I think near the end. We should follow up. We should do an episode in the future where we give some thought to like, what are some actual, from a policy perspective and a solutions perspective, like you said, it's easy to see, you kind of know in your gut that this is not a good trend for retail, for communities, for our society. But the solutions are much harder to identify when people are so price driven, and I myself as well in many instances. So anyway, we should follow up on an episode of that. I think it'd be fantastic. But Bill, awesome idea. Thank you for being the catalyst to start this conversation. Super enjoyable. And if you are not listening to Bill over on the Acquisitions Anonymous podcast, Bill, give that a quick little shout out because it's a super cool show.
Yeah. If you are interested in buying businesses, but also running them, our podcast, Acquisitions Anonymous, we publish twice a week, myself and Michael Girdley and Mill Snell and Heather Anderson. And we look at small businesses that are for sale. We kind of break them down and say, is this a good business? Would I invest in this business? You know, what are the problems? What are the strengths? What are the moats? So we kind of use businesses for sale as an excuse to do business breakdowns. So if you're into small business or you own one or you want to buy one or you want to buy another one, I think you'll like it. It's called Acquisitions Anonymous, available wherever your podcasts are downloaded.
Bill, I'm starting a new bike shop, like a local bike shop right next to the Walmart in town. I was wondering, I was hoping for some capital, maybe some partnership. What do you think, Ewan?
It would be philanthropy, but and I think it should exist, but it probably would not be a good investment.
No, of course, riffing off our earlier stuff. Anyway, check it out. It's a great, great podcast. Bill, we'll circle back on this and hopefully come up with some solutions to solve the retail world in the future. But this is super fun as always, man. Thanks for coming on and thanks for the idea and making it happen.
Sure. I hope people enjoy it. I swear I am pro small business. It's just, I don't think this lawsuit has basis. I think you need a much bigger stick to break up Amazon than the existing antitrust laws. That's all.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that you know founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted, high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest-rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.